Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There it is. Gorgeous.
But it fits you perfectly. This is
your wife. You and your wife are going to be those deer on Vic's sweater tonight.
Oh yes.
After she sees you in that.
What? Yeah, I really hope my mom is not watching this episode. Hey, and welcome to episode 3 of Drinks with a VC, the holiday edition. Holla. Hi, Bree. What was your biggest takeaway?
My biggest takeaway, besides the fact that you and I can't hold our liquor when it comes to Aperol Spritz, is that Brandon Farwell has a larger Broadway repertoire than even I do.
Yeah, I can't believe it. I've known him since his DFJ days, and I had no inkling as to the musical talent that he was hiding. And so I really do hope our listeners listen in to the very end when we throw down a musical challenge and have him name that musical. Also, can I just say that Aperol spritzes are sneaky, destructive. I mean, you just drink one and then another, and then before you know it, I think this is the most bomb that we've gotten over the 3 episodes that we've taped.
They sure creep up on you. I think our listeners and viewers will also enjoy seeing Brandon in a very festive holiday vest. So let's all get started.
Hello, and welcome to Drinks with a VC, episode 3, and our holiday special. Thanks for tuning in from whatever platform you are using. My name is Vic LaQuara. I'm the co-founder and managing director of Green Cow Venture Capital. And I'm joined by my friend and co-hostess with the mostest, Bree Hansen. She leads up Berklin's biz dev. Bree, you have 2 disclaimers for us.
Thanks, Vic. The first disclaimer, this is not your typical venture podcast. We assume the listener or the viewer can Google simple things like stage, industry focus, average check size, etc.
Yeah, we want to spice things up and in the process, get to know the person behind the yes or no investment decision. And that means we'll cover some current events. We'll learn more about the experiences and passions that have come to shape our guests' views. And hopefully have a few laughs and drinks in the process.
Yes, speaking of fun, guests and interviewers do consume alcoholic drinks during the taping of our show. So we do so responsibly, and we ask that everyone do so as well. So let's begin.
So, Bree, I have always wanted to have my own holiday special. Quick shout out to Mom. Look at me now. Actually, don't look at me. I'm wearing an obscenely ugly Christmas sweater with 2 reindeers humping on it.
Stand up here.
I'll just do that one more time here. And it's everywhere. They're everywhere.
Leave that to you.
Well, this is courtesy of co-host Bree, of you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Merry Christmas.
All right, we digress. Let's just jump into the introduction for tonight's guest, Brandon Farwell, who is the partner of X Fund. Prior to X Fund, he helped build out an 150-plus company portfolio at Rothenberg Ventures that included SpaceX, Robinhood, Gusto, Andela, and Patreon, amongst others. He was also a DFJ, where he was involved in their investments into Box, Yammer, and Twilio, to name a few. He's also been named to Forbes' 30 Under 30 VC list. He's an advisor to Cassis, and he holds degrees from Stanford University and an MBA from Harvard Business School. So without further delay, welcome to the show, Brandon Farwell. Hi.
Incredible. Vic and Bree, thanks for having me. Excited to be here, sweaters and all.
No, thank you. I mean, I hear, you know, your whole background and past, and it's just so impressive. Let's talk about your drink, the Aperol Spritz, which I am loving right now. This is dangerous. why this drink?
So, good question. I suppose the origin dates a couple years back to my honeymoon. With my lovely wife. We were in Italy, Capri specifically. and deciding on what to have over, I think it was day one lunch. And, you know, if you, of course, Negronis, there's so many great options to pursue. And the Aperol Spritz was, I think, top of the list. And we're like, I think we've tried Aperol. Obviously, we know what Spritz means. Let's give it a whirl. We did, I'd say, I don't know, an hour plus, maybe it was two in to the lunch. And one Aperol became two, became three. And so, like, this becomes a tradition for us. So into the honeymoon in Italy, I think we became kings and queens of Aperol Spritz, and then immediately brought that tradition back home. Where it generally, as I told you guys before, it's a summery beverage. Here we are December 15th or whatever day it is today, and we're enjoying it. So it's a drink for all seasons, at least in our eyes.
Absolutely. It's very tasty. It's very tasty.
And it's really easy to make, even for someone like you, Vic. It's like, you know, three parts of, you know, you have, it's really three parts equal each time, not hard. The Spritz, Aperol, Spritz being Prosecco, and then of course club soda, and then a little slice of real orange to put in there just for zest. But it's simple, so enjoy.
Do you have these, do you make them for yourselves on a regular basis at home, or is this something that you tend to enjoy at a bar?
The former. I don't think I have ever been to a bar and ordered an Aperol Spritz. Let me think about that. No, I haven't. Certainly not in the United States. In Europe, specifically other parts of Italy on our trip, yes. But I tend to go with more sort of, I guess, artisanal cocktails at bars where I just sort of say, I like bourbon and whiskey, sir or ma'am. Surprise me. And I'm usually quite surprised because I appreciate the artistic skill around the bar, whereas I have very little. So I usually just ask for, you know, here's my base drink, bourbon or whiskey. Surprise me. I think the Aperol is a little bit too easy. It's kind of a cop-out, you know, if you know what I mean. You might as well kind of try something new versus something you've already tried.
Well, so I normally associate this time of year with parties, you know, VC parties and, you know, these extravagant blowouts. And typically there's always a food or a drink that's sort of out of season. So this is keeping in that theme, right? It's okay to have a spring or a summery drink in the middle of winter, right?
Yes, sir.
Wherever you are. So, you know, don't feel confined is my message to our listeners. Drink what you want to drink. Plus, when was the last time you were outside anyway, right? I haven't seen the light in forever. So it might as well be spring outside, right?
Yes, sir. Easily add one ingredient, give it a startup sounding name, and then it's like the cocktail of the hour at a holiday party.
Yeah. What it needs an Indian spice.
What would the fourth ingredient be in your mind, Brie?
Well, I think Vic just said an Indian spice.
Cardamom, right? Cardamom. It would be like cardamom.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Roasted cardamom, just to make it up there. And some smoke.
Or like a bitters or like a simple syrup, but sure, that works too.
We're going with cardamom.
The smoked cardamom. Do you miss the VC extravagant parties during Christmas time, or are you happy to kind of be at home and kind of bypass that?
You know, I am, for better or for worse, a pretty social beast. So I think February to now has been pretty difficult not being able to see people in the flesh. Whether it's, you know, fellow investors or certainly being able to meet founders in the flesh. I always look forward, obviously, to the holiday season because the VC party circuit is always something to look forward to. And, you know, there's a handful of funds that have a recurring traditional party that's always awesome. You guys all are all smiling, so you probably are familiar with some of those groups that do a great job hosting. And in the absence of those, it's sad. So I am missing it. I'm very hopeful, both fingers crossed here, that next year everything will hopefully become somewhat back to track, at least for the holidays. Next year we'll be able to go back and see folks in the flesh. But I absolutely do miss it. But, you know, with that said, there's something to be also be said for you know, being able to spend more time with family. And, you know, I'm recently married. It's only been, you know, a couple of years. And so being able to be at home with my wife, we just also just got a dog. We have a brand new Cavapoo puppy, which is lovely. Named Winston. So we're spending a lot more time, you know, or being able to spend more time with him. So, it, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword. You know, it's, you know, I try to see some of the positive in this, which is being able to spend more time with loved ones, of course, in a safe manner. But I definitely do miss the social part of the business.
Yeah.
Well, we wanted you to feel like you were in the festive spirit today. And we also wanted it to be in the tradition of a VC holiday party. So let's open up box number one. It's in, there's bag number one, and then there's box number one in that bag.
Okay.
I love how we're jumping straight into VC unboxing. This holiday special is just, it's just chock full of holiday cheer.
Yeah.
So this is first bag one in box one.
I know. Yeah. Bag one, box
one. The little
one.
Bag. The little box.
And the, yeah, the little box in the bag. Now, we know you're used to getting really cool swag at these parties. So let's go ahead and see. Yeah.
Please.
Let's see what kind of swag
open
you're getting
and
today.
Maybe give us a play-by-play.
Okay. Box is currently being opened. The top slid off very easily. Didn't have to work too hard for it. And the reveal. Is a can I please wear this right now?
Yeah, please
yes.
do. Please wear
absolutely.
It. It's a that beautiful holiday vest.
That is incredible. For those who can't see what's going down here, but obviously wish they did. This is a pretty horrendous sweater that also happens to be opened in the chest region, showing off a very hairy male chest.
It is a caricature of your chest if you weren't in such fantastic shape, Brandon.
And I wish I could be bench pressing more, Vic, but I don't know if you heard, but the but the clothes. So
yes.
I have not been able to frequent the gym, as it were, much at all this year.
Well, but go ahead, put it on. Please join us in this holiday cheer.
With this, I have the shirt, so I'm gonna don it. Is that okay?
Yes. Please.
Okay.
Now, for those of you at home, we'll give a bigger description. He has like one of those fake tuxedo shirt type things, but instead of a tuxedo, it is a little bit of an overweight man's body. And then it's got a beautiful vest over it. You know, like just Christmassy down to the belly button, almost like one of those deep V belly button type, right?
It's horrendous. It's actually the ugliest thing I've seen ever.
So,
It's like those muscle. It's those muscle shirts with a vest that you used to see, right? People wear.
Exactly.
You know, with the fake muscles on them. Only this person's fake, thick. And
Oh yeah. There it is. Gorgeous.
But it fits you perfectly.
You and your wife are going to be those deer on Vic's sweater tonight.
Oh, yes.
After she sees you in that.
Yeah, I really hope my mom is not watching this episode. Just listen, and that's enough. That's probably too descriptive. Brendan, I actually feel like that shirt fits you perfectly.
It does.
I'm scared.
This will not be the last time I put this bad boy on. This is fantastic.
I hope not.
Nope. It's also coming. So, Whitney and I are heading off on Saturday to Phoenix to go visit the in-laws for folks, and this shirt's coming with. Yeah. So
they're gonna love it.
They will. In fact, I may even wear it on the plane.
Make sure you do a little fashion show for your neighbors and Vintage Oaks.
Sure, I can do that too. we're on the lower end of the average age here of our neighbors. But I can do some Christmas caroling, and which I think is a great tradition, by the way. That's unfortunately for whatever reason just isn't as common these days. But we're gonna go caroling.
I think Gavin Newsom banned it.
Oh, he did? Darn it. Okay. Well, what about at a safe distance? What if we knock on the doorstep, you know, 10, 15 feet back,
That's right. Socially distance yourself and then make sure you're sort of in one of those large hamster bubbles and then put the shirt on. And I think, you know, just wing it. Go for it.
Call your buddy. And visors as well. You know, the visors that make sure that.
Yeah. I mean, we're promoting, you know, safe living and responsible quarantining and social distancing. But that doesn't mean that you can't have a little fun too with folks, right?
Spread joy. I think that's the most important part.
Yeah. I don't know when caroling died, and I don't know what part of the United States caroling might still exist. I'm in St. Louis right now, and I'll tell you, no one's caroling.
No caroling.
Well, there are light shows like I've never seen before, but no one's caroling.
My guess is it has to do with weather. In some parts of the country, others are probably a little bit less keen to be outside when it's 20 below. But here on the West Coast, hey, you know, walking over to your neighbor's house, ringing the doorbell and singing jingle bells, that sounds like a great way to spread joy.
Mm. And COVID.
Yeah.
Perhaps. You got me on that one, Brie.
Well, speaking of holiday traditions, what are both of your favorite Christmas movies? Or holiday movies. It could be a Hanukkah movie too.
That's a really good one. So I will answer that by illustrating the movie that Whitney and I watched last night, because it's top of mind. And that is happens to be starring one of my personal favorites, this gentleman named Will Ferrell, perhaps you've heard of him. and he stars in this epic film called Elf.
Yeah, that's a special film.
So
there's
good.
Just a lot of one-liners in that are incredible. And my guess is, and I don't know this, so you have to verify this, that some of that was probably just complete ad lib, just get on camera and Will, you just do you. And he just comes out with some brilliance. That's one. And then two is a little bit more romantic. And that's Love Actually. That one gets me every time. All-star cast, great message at the end. In fact, that's a tradition that we'll continue to have, Whitney and I. I think it's 3 years running where we've made sure we see that over the holidays. So what about you guys though?
Man, you know, honestly, I think you hit the nail on the head with Love Actually. For so many years before I got married, Love Actually was my anthem. It was like, I'll find someone, right? And then I found someone, and you know, all of a sudden The Holiday with Cameron Diaz and who else is in it? Kate Winslet and Jude Law and Jack Black.
Jack Black, yep.
That movie usurped Love Actually for me. I still love Love Actually, but that movie did it, and then Family Stone. But I'm gonna actually go with something that was very recent that Laura and I watched last night, as a matter of fact, and it was her first time watching this, and I'm gonna go ahead and put this question to rest. Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
Yes, it is,
and it's one of my favorite Christmas movies.
That is very well said. Is that the so there's Die Hard 2, there's Die Hard with a Vengeance, there's like 12 Die Hards. Is this the original?
I'm talking about the original. Rest in peace, Alan Rickman. I feel like the original does it for me. And, you know, everything from Yippee-ki-yay to the dead guy in the elevator with the ho, ho, ho on his shirt. I just feel like, look, it's everything that Christmas is to me.
Dead guy in the elevators? Good to know.
Dead guy in the elevators with ho, ho, ho on him.
For the holiday.
Sure. Yeah. What about you, Brie?
I'll quote my favorite movie and see if you guys can name it.
Even better.
Okay.
Grace, she died 20 years ago.
Huh.
Wait. Oh, man.
You another quote?
Shitter's full.
Oh, yes. Christmas Story.
No. Nope.
Absolutely.
Nope. Ugh. Not Christmas Story. That's the leg lamp, Vic. Come on.
Oh, yeah, no. I know this because it's my brother-in-law's favorite. Is that the and he does quote, is this the Lampoons?
It is Lampoons.
Yeah, okay.
That's my favorite.
Is that the movie with the scene where they're all eating around the table and like the turkey is like super under or overcooked?
It's totally overcooked.
It explodes and then they're all like eating bones or whatever.
Exactly.
And it's like super loud on the table and the plates. Okay. Yeah. That's a winner.
Now, I feel like this year, though, Home Alone is a little bit more up my sleeve because I feel like the city, San Francisco, is empty, and I feel like sometimes I'm home alone.
Rather topical. Question on that. One, two, or three?
One. Oh, but two's good, too. Definitely not three.
One or two. I think in three, Macaulay Culkin does not star.
You need the OG.
Yeah, it's not on the same caliber as one and two. But, you know, it's there, so you had to ask. But I think Lost in New York, you know, that's just, I don't know. There's something about Christmas in New York that really gets me. But of course, the original is fantastic.
He also had that talk boy in Home Alone 2. Remember that? That everyone was like, it was like the Walkman, but it was like the talk boy. I was like, I want a talk boy for Christmas.
Doesn't he use the talk boy to play his uncle's like screaming tirade about getting out of like not washing him in the shower?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yep. That's a classic. Yeah, that's I think on most people's list, that's probably a top either 1 to 5 response to your favorite Christmas movies, Home Alone, 1 or 2.
You know what's intriguing though? I would just say none of us picked an old timey movie. And it's interesting because I think amongst our family, there's Miracle on 24th Street, there's, oh my gosh, come on. Give me some more. I used to know these. It's a Wonderful Life. Every year, I feel like my family watches these. My sister in particular is like, we have to put these on. And every year, I'm falling asleep. And I hate to sound like that, but they're just not my thing. So it's kind of nice to feel supported amongst you both. And in my genuine, like, they're cool. They're great. Yeah. But they're not my thing.
We're futurists here. So, you know,
there you go.
I will say, I wouldn't say Love Actually is like a highly, like, isn't like a brand new, you know, film, you know, coming on, you know, hot onto the scene. I want to say that's probably like a 2000 vintage, maybe even earlier. I could be wrong, but that's not that's not a newbie. Although, same with Elf. Gosh, I want to say Elf may have come out when I was in high school, but it's not a, you know, from the 80s.
Speaking of high school, you were a rower in high school, is that correct?
Yes.
Well, I think that's pretty cool. It also explains why you have a better body than the one you put on with that shirt, because you were a rower. Tell us about how you got into rowing.
Good question. Let me think about that. How did I get into rowing? So I, in high school, initially... played football and basketball my freshman and sophomore years of high school. Loved both, but my sophomore year got a concussion and broke my left elbow, both in the same season, and realized, you know what? I love this. I love the team. I love the camaraderie. I think our freshman year, we were maybe 1-9, and then my sophomore year, we got a little bit better to the point where we were probably like 7-3, so we kind of did a nice reversal there. But I was like, you know, kind of what else is out there? I know I'm not going to probably go, collegiate levels of either sport. And I give 100% credit actually to my dad. He was also a rower in high school and college. He went to Kent, high school out east, and then Stanford. And he said, hey, you should check out this sport crew. I kind of read about it. He told me about it. And of course our high school didn't offer it. It's a pretty kind of, you know, it's a relatively esoteric sport, certainly on the West Coast. And turned out there had been a club team started around maybe 2 or so years prior. This was 2002, because I was class of 04 in high school. And it was at the time, pretty much an all women's team. It was then called Silicon Valley Crew. it was all women for the most part, and then they were really two guys, and then two of them actually were actually went to the high school that I did. They were seniors when I was a sophomore, and I kind of reached out to them and said, "Hey, you know, I have an interest in this. Do you mind if I come to a practice?" And I did, and absolutely fell in love with the sport. Ended up helping to recruit a handful of other guys to join the crew. So we had a guys team and a gals team. And ended up spending 2.5 years quitting football and baseball, and then spending the rest of my high school career, again, the 2.5 years, rowing. And absolutely fell in love with the sport, went all in on it. Obviously, it was a year-round focus for me. And loved it so much that I ended up going to, I think this was the summer of my junior year, camp, that kind of, you know, training development camp at Stanford. And then was fortunate enough to work with the coach there and ultimately be able to row there in college. And to this day, my favorite book, and they were supposed to make a movie on this, but I think it got lost in the Weinstein, issues. Called Boys in the Boat. If you're familiar with the book or the story, but it depicts the University of Washington varsity in the early 1930s. That crew ended up being national champions. This was the, again, University of Washington crew. It was actually the freshman boat, not even the varsity boat. They beat all, you know, the conventional rowing greats and elites, typically out of Harvard and Yale, et cetera. And ultimately at the time in the 30s, it was the boat that won the national championship that became the US Olympic boat, as opposed to pulling guys, you know, two from Harvard, one from Yale, one from wherever. It was, they pulled the whole boat and ended up beating the Nazi Germany in 1936, I wanna say, Olympics. That boat particularly won gold. Of course, this is right soon there, right around the same time as Hitler was elected chancellor. And so literally the American boat in lane six, which had never won, they were placed in lane six. Of course, the Germans got lane one, the best lane, where historically every crew in the races leading up to the finals won. They were shoved into lane six, won, handsomely, I think by over a length, which means the length of the boat, which is easily 3+ seconds. And just the story of these misfit guys, most of which obviously from Washington, you know, grew up at, you know, loggers, laborers, just salt of the earth men, coming here and beating the Germans. Just an incredible story. It's hard to really articulate just how incredible that backstory is, especially when I think two of the guys got sick while they were there. I think one even got pneumonia. I mean, it was just, it's a incredible story of adversity for those guys and then coming through with the gold in the end. I mean, it's just, it's a great sport. It's a great book. Highly recommend it.
And the Germans are known for being incredible rowers, correct?
Tough to argue with that. Yeah, I was very fortunate to go in 2012 as a spectator, absolutely not as a participant, in the 2012 Olympics in London, where I had a few teammates of mine from Stanford in the 2 and the 8, 1 and the 4 and 1 and the pair compete. And in that year, the 8 got 4th place, which was fantastic. But of course, the Germans got first. I think followed by the Canadians and the Brits, but it's generally, yes. I mean, it's usually the Germans are, you know, top of the line, 1st through 3rd, of course, also the Brits, Canadians and Americans are kind of the all four vie for that top position. But
So I'm going to take this in a different area. Can you open up the next gift for our VC unboxing? This is gift number 2. And, while you're doing that, I think we're talking about kind of blasts from the past, and you had mentioned that you were going to pick up, you know, the oar again and try and find ways of getting in the boat and continue to row. As you're opening up this next gift.
Wait, is this bag 2 or box 2? No, that's last.
Oh, that's last.
Oh, okay.
But that one, see, I had to check.
See, I'm glad you did, because let me tell you,
it would have been okay. A little bit of Aperol
Spritz goes a long way.
I know. This thing is, these are buzzy.
Can I just say, you know, our first guest was Old Fashions. Our second guest was Macallan. And
this
I
is
feel
the
like
drunkest I've been.
This is the drunkest I've been.
Yeah.
And this is the least amount of alcohol by volume.
It's sad. Let me lose Brandon. Brandon, did you fall in the bag?
Is it bag two, box
yes,
three?
It's bag okay. two, box three.
Okay,
perfect.
There's at least three items in here. Should I pull all of them out?
Okay. That's correct.
I'm eating the orange on the Aperol now. Oh, it's so good.
Oh my gosh.
Tasty orange.
You guys, wow.
Christmas came early.
No
so,
kidding.
What are you looking at?
So tell the audience who cannot see you and the audience who can what you're looking at.
Incredible. Geez. So I, wow, you guys, thank you so much. This is extremely, extremely generous and thoughtful. Wow. So I also, I guess, dating back to high school, started playing drums. I did so in my high school jazz band, not to add to my weird quirks, but ended up also starting being a part of a band with a few other high school friends, playing classic rock and thinking that we were, you know, the next coming to Led Zeppelin or the Rolling Stones, which of course we were far from that, but at least we had fun. had some, you know, pretend like we had groupies, the whole thing. And so what I'm holding here as a very generous and thoughtful gift are two sets of sticks, which are very nice, wood tip sticks, beautiful. And looks like a chop builder pad, which is typically what you use to practice doubles, which is just, you know, ways of just doing like quarter notes or 16th notes on a drum or a cymbal. You can practice on a pad on the go as opposed to having to carry your drum set around with you. And I think that's what this is. Yeah.
Yeah, we got you some practice pads of various sizes there.
Amazing.
We felt like it went with the theme of Christmas because you're a drummer, a little drummer boy, you know. Maybe you could play us a little putter-up-a-pum-pum.
Putter-up-a-pum-pum, indeed. Oh my gosh, you guys, thank you so much. This is extremely generous and very nice. Extremely high caliber percussion set. So thank you guys both. It's funny, I have my my old drum set is not currently at our house. I think I'd end up destroying any sense of neighborhood chip I have with my neighbors if I ended up beating these things to death as soon as we moved into our new home. So the plan is to ultimately get an electronic set and believe it or not, bring the band back together with a few of my high school friends who are still playing guitar and bass. This will allow me to sharpen the skills, which are extremely dusty. It's probably been a solid 7 to 10 years. But again, this is so kind. Thank you guys.
So I was just thinking about this, you know, between oars and drums, drumsticks, obviously, you know, you've been in bands, you've road crew, each really has a tremendous amount of, it requires a tremendous amount of trust and enthusiasm for your team and the people that you're with, right? Your group. You know, can you tell us a little bit about, and not to switch subjects entirely, but can you tell us a little bit about your team and your crew currently at X Fund and yeah. how that came about? And, you know, some of the qualities that you saw that just really, you know, stuck out at you and why you joined Patrick and company.
Sure, of course. This is perfect timing as Bree continues to add Prosecco to her drink. Well done. So I think that, I guess I'll answer that with a bit of a story. First, like, I mean, in part, people love stories. And second, I think it kind of ultimately illustrates how and why I joined Patrick. So in 2004, four and I was a freshman, I, you know, growing up in the Bay Area and in Silicon Valley, I've always been super interested in tech and entrepreneurship and investing. And I elected to join an organization on Stanford's campus called Bases, which is the entrepreneurship student run club on campus, and helped to lead that club for the team was obviously just me. Fantastic team, actually, that I'm still very close friends with, many of which have gone off and started companies and are CTOs of public companies. And it's an incredible cohort of people. And through that process, met Patrick because he was a newly minted partner at NEA. I want to say this was, again, 2004, 2005 timeframe. And NEA became a sponsor, partner organization to Bases. And so I met Patrick through that context. Became friends, hit it off. He became a phenomenal mentor and advisor to a company I was a part of with a few of their colleagues from undergrad. We had built a solution to help high school students to assess and ultimately predict their candidacy for undergraduate admissions. So the very stressful black box process of applying to college, we tried to illuminate that black box to a certain extent and build a kind of data-driven approach to understanding your likelihood of acceptance into certain schools. Of course, not everyone has access to or can afford college counseling services. So we kind of built a scalable software solution to address that problem, which honestly, even 10 years plus later is still acute. You have people now, I mean, you saw parents are, you know, paying schools and trying to figure out finagle ways to get their kids into school. I mean, it's certainly still a problem X many years later. Patrick was a phenomenal mentor and kind of advisor to that whole rodeo. And when I did my initial foray in the investing world in 2010 with DFJ, we had looked at a bunch of companies together. NEA and DFJ were co-investors in a handful of companies like Box that I was very fortunate to be able to work on and learn a lot from. So we kind of got to know each other in sort of a mentor, mentee, co-investor, friends, context. And then, you know, Patrick had headed the consumer team at NEA for nearly a decade. So, you know, his sort of superpowers are very much so D2C and looking at, you know, e-commerce and marketplaces very much so with the consumer lens. And, you know, I'm just bad at that. It's not an area that I can get lucky every now and then, but he's just extremely, extremely good on that front. Whereas most of my career and focus has been on the B2B side. Infrastructure and application software, you know, B2B in nature for the most part. So it's a great kind of complementary partnership, if you will, between the two of us. And of course, you know, what's more important than challenging each other, you know, from coming at it with different thought processes and of course perspectives. Another thing I didn't quite appreciate and realize until we actually started putting the rubber to the road and actually working together is, you know, Patrick's network of both founders and investors is different than mine, almost completely different, because he's, you know, kind of knows the, you know, general partner currently running and managing XYZ firm up and down Sand Hill Road or beyond kind of network echelon, whereas mine's kind of like the next generation below, if you will, the up and comers, kind of younger folks. And so that kind of network bifurcation has been highly creative to us going forward, where we can get introduced to, you know, almost anybody up and down, you know, the kind of firm hierarchical structure, if you will. So that we didn't realize, but has been super helpful. He's like, yeah, I know XYZ who, you know, run, you know, Benchmark or whatever. And I know the next kind of generation to come who may have just been promoted to partner or what have you. And then same thing with the founders, you know, he kind of knows a different generation.
So you bring up generations, and I think so much of what you do at X Fund relies on the connections that you have with student organizations, entrepreneur organizations within universities and their faculty and advisors, et cetera. How is COVID, in particular pandemic, I have nieces and nephews, I know how you know, they've gone off to college and their college experiences are so different from UI or Bree's college experience. How has that change brought on by the pandemic kind of altered the way that you all work with universities and colleges?
Yeah, phenomenal question. So a bit of origin to the funds and then also kind of how the pandemic, to your question, has altered, if at all, our kind of run of show and how we meet founders and support them. So originally XFund was founded by Harvard University, NEA, and Accel partners to really be a for-profit commercial supportive entity to a brand new engineering school that Harvard had founded way back in 2011-12 timeframe. And in order to continue to embed really entrepreneurship at the core of this new engineering school, let's have a venture capital fund right on campus to promote, you know, creativity and entrepreneurship right on campus. And Harvard, of course, has historically helped to produce some incredible transformational technology startups, anything from Microsoft to Zappos, obviously, to Facebook, et cetera. So what a unique gem, what an incredible opportunity to be able to leverage that network. And not just exclusively at Harvard, but you know, the dean at the time of the engineering school who really helped get the fund up and running said, hey, you should not exclusively back Harvard engineers. I mean, this is a brand new engineering school.
Right.
You should draw talent into this new community, this new platform that we have here, but back everybody and work with other schools. So we obviously thought deeply behind what schools should be partner with and work closely with that have historically championed entrepreneurship in a way that if you just look at the data of the campus of the founders' origins and from very successful venture-backed companies, it's pretty clear. I mean, Stanford really blows everyone out of the water, followed pretty closely by Harvard. And then you have other phenomenal schools like MIT and Berkeley and University of Pennsylvania, Wharton, that obviously also are at, right at the core kind of power law curve there amongst those four or five or six schools.
Sure.
So it's important to note we're open to everybody. That's a very important thing. We're not exclusively backing Berkeley grads or MIT grads or even Harvard grads. But we've built, to your point on like a squad, your team, your crew, we've built a longer tail institutional network and relationships with certain faculty and student groups across the core campuses that we focus. And those are the core campuses that I just highlighted. Where we work every year on a recurring institutional basis with the leadership of either student-run entrepreneurship clubs on campus and then the permanence of the faculty who are teaching in, you know, entrepreneurship departments, typically sometimes also in computer science. And so we've built a crew, a network, and you can see a lot of them on our website, many of which, again, are permanent in nature, you know, working exclusively with us. And it really helps us to navigate the university, to find the gems, to find the next generation of highly creative, entrepreneurial, ambitious founders super early on in their journeys. And so far that thesis is playing out well. I mean, we're only on fund three. We just launched and announced that in September, 120 million, which we're extremely excited about, but it's early, right? I mean, we're on fund three, we're not on fund 13. So, but we've had some really great early wins with companies like Kensho and which has been realized and it's just a fantastic outcome for us. Then a handful of companies, of course, that are, you know, doing really well, like Guideline and Philo and Zumper, et cetera. And so how we've changed, if at all, during the pandemic is it's actually, we've seen a huge influx of net new deal flow actually because of the pandemic. Students, as opposed to coming back for their second year in B school or their senior year of college, they're like, you know what? It's like going to be a lot different now during the pandemic. I can't see my friends anymore. I can't see my favorite profs. I can't be on campus. I can't travel if you're in B school, whatever. I'm not going back. I'm taking a year. I'm pursuing that company I've been working on this side now for 6, 8, 12 months, and I'm going all in.
Yeah.
And so actually our deal flow has actually increased across our core campuses because in part spawned because of the effects of the pandemic. And it's students, many of which trying to solve their own problems, like synchronous and asynchronous communication, building new like workstations for people to collaborate on. I mean, it's been a lot of pandemic related problem sets that they're trying to solve for, which has been a pretty recurring theme that we've seen. And so if we had started now, if we had started XFund in 2020 without the institutional relationships and network to find these people and identify these founders and help them, it'd be a lot harder. But since we've kind of built these and have had the flywheels going of kind of knowing the right, being in the right circles and finding these founders early on, which has been the case now for 8, 9 years or so, it's been a lot easier Obviously, it's impossible for us to see everything coming out of certain universities. I mean, that would be a crazy claim to be able to say that. But we're doing our best to be able to see, I think, a lot.
And I mean, it sounds like, and by the way, I'm a huge proponent of this concept of going after and backing lateral thinkers, right? People that have kind of not necessarily a tech first background, but have a real passion or experience or unique lens to a pain point, and then all of a sudden can leverage technology to solve that pain point. But because, you know, they bring a different aspect to it, they, you know, they can find that success and build hopefully a scalable solution to that problem, right? So everything is sounding like it's working in great harmony, right, amongst X Fund. But that hasn't always been the case in all the teams that you've been on. Nope. And, you know, my question to you is, do you learn more about yourself? You know, you're a superhero, and I can attest to this. You do read people really well. Do you think that you add more to your superpower when things are so harmonious, or do you feel like you learn more about yourself and find your superpower in a less harmonious kind of environment, which you've been privy to?
Yes, sir. So a few things. One is your initial comment before this one around lateral thinkers, I should have addressed earlier, because it's a great one and an important overall pillar of how we invest at X-Fund and the types of founders we like to work with. You know, we're not an extremely technocratic shop where we're exclusively, you know, hunting and fishing in the computer science departments across these core campuses and exclusively only backing engineers. We actually purposefully go after, economics majors, history majors, you know, folks that studied ancient Latin and Greek. and that's for a few reasons. One is typically these people have, you know, they're not keen on just making the next version three, a little bit better than version two, and kind of off we go, rinse, wash, repeat, and it's incremental innovation. Sure. But these people that we call lateral thinkers typically have unique social insights about people's behavior going forward. And if you had told me that we would have a $100 billion business predicated on people opening up their own personal homes to strangers and inviting them in where they could hack you to death at night, I would slap you in the face. But it's people like, you know, Brian Chesky and the founders, you know, of Airbnb, for example. And I'm pretty sure Brian is a Rhode Island, is a RISD grad. So he studied, you know, design. The folks at Palantir, like, you know, Karp, I think he's a social theory major. I mean, there are these people that don't necessarily are, you know, computer science or mechanical engineering backgrounds, but have, you know, interesting, you know, academic pursuits beforehand, and then have this unique take on how we're going to operate as a society going forward, and they want to start new movements. And that's super cool. Like that, you know, so again, we're not so technocratic in our thinking on the type of people that we back. I think that's an important part to mention, which is why we call ourselves like this kind of liberal arts focused kind of lateral thinking type shop, which so far is, you know, paid some dividends for us. In fact, Daniel Nadler, the CEO and co-founder or founder of Kensho, our incredible early win, which the company sold to S&P Global a couple of years ago for nearly $700 million. We were fortunate early backers at a $5 million valuation. But, you know, Daniel was a poet. He literally published a book of love poems that was, you know, like acclaimed, like extremely highly and reviewed by the New York Times. And I mean, guy was a poet and he was a PhD in economics. So, you know, the guy was not a, you know, computer scientist by any means out of the gates. So anyway, I just bring that up as an example. So your second question. There's no question. I've been through, even before X Fund, spending time at a fund called RV, Rothenberg Ventures, where founders, fantastic human being, extremely ambitious, bright, capable, and I just think got ahead of his skis and ultimately, kind of outspent and didn't have proper governance and communication amongst employees and amongst LPs and, you know, the most important constituent, really.
Yeah.
I think there's another lesson in there, which is going into business with friends and people that you know and respect and have for 10 plus years can be really difficult. But there's something to be said for complementary skill sets, but knowing each other and having a relationship that's much more professional versus personal nature, where you actually feel much more comfortable pushing back, asking the same question a third or fourth time and actually demanding an answer, and then having proper checks and balances as an institution versus just sort of like run of the cuff kind of thing. We'll figure it out and hire, you know, an internal CFO versus an external CFO, and just kind of doing it right versus you know, running a million miles an hour and letting things slide and accruing a bunch of quote unquote technical debt, if you will, before just actually solving it.
Yeah. From Berkland, I'm going to have to say, always have an outside CFO, you know?
Yeah, well, there you go. Actually, they come full circle. I teed you up for that, Bree. You're welcome.
I had to just take it. You literally were like, here, Bree. And I'm like, yes, Brandon, CFOs.
There you go. Hi, Berkland also. But it's a perfect example of, you know, checks and balances and having proper governance. And obviously you have a phenomenal institution with experience, obviously, within the office of the CFO at Berkland, that can ensure that every T is crossed, right? So, and you know, all the communication is there and everything's appropriate. So, just stuff like that. And, you know, how do you marry that with a fast growing startup that's, you know, hiring people and executing on a vision that was unique but taking that and where the Silicon Valley culture is go, be number one, keep going, go, break through walls, versus just taking the time to actually stop, reflect, and get it right. You know, build the right governance, build the right institutions internally or externally, was the case maybe with an external CFO, for example, to ensure that you're placed properly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it sounds like you are in a fantastic position and you're right where you're supposed to be. So cheers to that,
yes, sir.
First of all. Now, we covered crew, we covered drums. Prior to this recording, we talked a little bit about another passion of yours. And I think there's no better way to sort of get into that than for you to go to the next gift. And don't even ask me which box to open. I don't know at this point. Bree,
it's a bag. It's bag three.
It's a bag.
Remember, VC and boxing turn to bags because bags are easier.
Right.
Only by process of elimination could I figure that out. So, you guys, this is amazing.
Okay, for the audience at home, what are you looking at?
Yes, what are you looking at?
For those who can see, I'll throw it up on the video, but I'll also highlight it. So Musicals, the definitive illustrated story. So I believe, obviously I have not read the foreword on this yet, but it's a book that highlights maybe the history of musicals or like a whole bunch of them.
Since we can't get you tickets to one, we wanted to give you one. You can look at it and think about it for when this thing... is done, but it's a beautiful coffee table book for your new place.
Oh my gosh. It's aesthetically, it's this gorgeous sort of gold, you know, sequence plated book. It's gorgeous. Thank you guys so much. This is, again, thoughtful and creative. Thank you.
So are you an actor, singer, dancer, singer, dancer, actor? What's your order?
Definitely not dancer. I can pretend, but it'll be ugly. I would say more, I guess we can revert back to high school days, but more kind of actor and then wannabe singer and then awful dancer, if I were to put them in order of one to three. This also kind of references, you know, background and family. I grew up in a family where we just loved musical theater. We, between San Francisco, New York, and London, we would, as a family, travel with the sole purpose of going to see shows. And so, you know, we became utterly obsessed with a lot of Andrew Lloyd Webber stuff, including Phantom of the Opera, and you know, really got into Wicked. And personally, for me, Les Miserables, I was also fortunate to be in it in high school. And it just adopted an affinity for musical theater, not necessarily just not like plays, but actually like musical theater. And so, you know, getting back to high school all the way through now, you know, I think at least in non-pandemic times, I'm going to a show 3-4 times a year, if not more. I love it. It's, you know, some people make fun of me for it, and that's cool too. But I just think it's just such a, you know, not just highly entertaining, but just the incredible voices that some of these people have, I guess all of these people have, you know, married to the talent around being able to act and be on and be expressive, you know, day in and day out, when you're literally doing the same darn thing every day, if not twice a day, is extremely impressive. And then, you know, you read about some of these folks that, you know, start in the role of Phantom or start in the role of Valjean Valjean in Les Mis, and they literally have done it 4,000 or 5,000 times. Think about that. Literally doing something day in and day out for 3 or 4 years, to the point where you're doing it thousands of times, singing the same notes, yet at the end of the whole thing, you're still like uber passionate about the character. And every time you go in with your game face on it and you freaking nail it. Like, that's awesome. Yeah. That's dedication. Yeah. So yeah, I've just been super interested in musical theater. And, you know, I will say, Hollywood kind of got it wrong. Like, they, as much as I love, you know, Hugh Jackman and Anne Hathaway and stuff, but like Russell Crowe, I mean, there were a few miscasts in Les Mis, the movie. I don't know if you guys saw it, but I think it was good, but it could have been a lot better. Vic's like, yeah, I know what you mean, man. And then same thing. I mean, Gerald Butler is Phantom. I mean, the guy is too, he's, you know, he needed to be a little bit more kind of gritty, you know, he was a little bit too much more of a romantic lover boy. I mean, that's not the Phantom. So I, you know, as much as I love the theatrics and the setting and the, you know, and the costumes and what, and you have a lot more, you know, liberty and freedom, obviously, in a movie setting versus a musical on stage, but they kind of left for me a lot more to be desired. It's interesting how the leads, like the Hamilton or the Valjeans and Les Mis or the Phantom or whatever, like each new lead, each new individual actor or singer who comes in, I think has their own unique perspective.
Absolutely.
Ways of kind of singing the notes and acting and everything. And that's what makes it cool, right? Because they come in with something fresh and new. And either you dig that or you don't. Like, if you're kind of a traditionalist or whatever, like if you know, you love Colm Wilkinson as Valjean, who was I think the original, and you don't like the way the new guy, whoever comes in next, sings Bring Him Home, because it's not exactly how Colm did it when he was originally Valjean, like, you're probably not going to like it, right? He doesn't draw out the right notes. He doesn't, you know, hit that particular tenor perfectly or whatever. You're going to be like, well, shit, man, you didn't do it right. But the answer is no. Like, it's you. It's your own secret sauce. It's how you want to portray the character in your own spice. So, I mean, there's no right or wrong. It kind of speaks to you individually based off, you know, you like a stronger voice, you like a better actor, you like whatever, to each his own.
How do you think VR is going to change your experience with Broadway? And would you watch a VR Broadway?
Yeah, I saw some of the early VR content on The Lion King, actually, in like 2014 or 15 timeframe. And it's, honestly, it wasn't that exciting, because yes, you had a 360-degree camera placed like on Pride Rock, and you could like be on Pride Rock and see Simba being hoisted, and you know, you could look left and you know, there's Scar, and you know, look right and there's, you know, Sarabi or whatever. cool, but I didn't have the same experience because the audio wasn't the same. Like, nailing the audio in theater is just so paramount. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of this awful kind of 2D shitty audio that didn't put me there properly. Aesthetically, being able to kind of turn my head left and right and be able to be in that immersive 360 experience was cool. But without the audio as the full experience, I kind of gave it like maybe a 6 out of 10, 6.5. Mm-hmm. And you know, back in 2014, 15, The media was like, VR is the second coming. We're not going to go to theaters anymore. We're going to have headsets at home and be like tapped in, and it's going to change TV, media, and content. here we are, 2020, five or so years later, and well, you guys know what's happened. So,
full pandemic, no VR.
Exactly.
If this is the time.
Totally, exactly. Like, if this was the tailwind that would just like break the mold here, and we're all, you know, plugged into Vives and Oculuses, like, this is it, and here we are. And I don't know how many have been purchased. They're certainly putting a lot of marketing behind it.
Yeah.
But I just think, you know, without the killer content and, you know, for a while you had to be tethered into a crazy computer. I mean, there were a lot of, and we were still figuring it out, and that's fine. It's just the media took hold and said, this is it. This is it. This is the next compute platform. Everyone get ready. There's, you know, funds are deploying millions into this thing, and it just, it was too early. And, you know, that's yeah. investing, timing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
Speaking of timing.
Yes.
I'm really excited. I'm rubbing my hands together in a nefarious kind of evil way. Bree has cooked up this next segment, especially for you, Brandon.
So we're going to play a little Name That Tune.
Oh boy, okay.
Okay, here, get your game face on. Rules. If you get, I mean, this is obviously going to be around Broadway musicals, okay? So if you get either the song or the musical, Vic and I are going to rotate drinking our beautiful little Aperol spritz here. So, Vic, you better top up.
It's topped up. There's no ice left in my glass.
I have the same
Aperol spritz.
I know. If you get both the song and the musical, both Vic and I have to drink. And if you get neither correct, which unfortunately I think you're going to get all of them correct based on our conversation, you have to drink. There's going to be, there's one or two, but okay. Now, according to an article I read on the internet, we can play up to 10 seconds of a song without our video being taken down or possible copyright infringement. So I also chose low quality karaoke versions that will allow you to sing if drunk enough as well.
Okay.
Ooh, yeah,
so
yeah.
Let me get started with...
This is good. I'm excited.
I'm like losing my voice, so it's going to be awful if I decide to belt out. But we'll like see if I actually recognize any of these, but I'll do my best.
I feel like your knowledge of musicals is soup and my liver are both needing to be at their peak at this point, because you're not going to miss and I'm going to have to drink the whole time.
Okay, can't wait.
Okay, so let's go. Here we go.
I'm regretting this.
Oh, that's Oklahoma.
Yes, it is. What's the name of the song?
That's Curly's first song. Oh, What a Beautiful Morning.
Ugh, right. We both have to drink, Vic. Ah, I was hoping you would get that one.
Nailed it.
Gonna get annihilated.
So you were in Oklahoma, is that correct?
I was in high school. That's right.
Who'd you play?
I played Curly, believe it or not. Well, I mean, I guess the quick answer on that, if we want to do another quick sidebar, is the answer is really not Curly to begin with, because I had very little talent and decided to, hey, let's just give this a shot because I love theater. And our high school, Menlo, I went to a phenomenal theater department and I said, screw it, let's do it. So we're doing Oklahoma for our spring musical. Was cast as like a lowly cowboy with maybe like four lines that probably half the time I forgot them, and, you know, would do some dancing on the side kind of thing, very much the support role cast thing. The lead, who was a senior at the time, a guy named Matt Pick, who was a phenomenal singer, was Curly. He was, and most of his lead roles go to seniors, which makes sense. His, unfortunately, grandfather died the night before, I think either our opener or our second show. And then so our drama department head and teacher, I remember a friend named Beth Orr, looked at me and said, yep, we have no understudy. And believe it or not, I want you to do it.
So, Star is born.
Hardly. Which I just watched that movie for the third time 2 days ago. It's fantastic.
Love that movie.
Fantastic film.
But I cried the first time I saw that movie, by the way.
Did you? I think I did too, by the way. I mean, the end is just so gut-wrenching. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I probably cried then if you guys did, for sure.
You definitely did. I think all three of us did.
I think I cry when I just hear the song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The initial scene in the bar where she's singing like French, I'm not even sure what song she's singing.
La Vie en Rose.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. And like, he's just like, you can just tell, I mean, the acting is fantastic. He's just looking at her with this, like, these eyes, like, you are perfect.
See, now that's chemistry, you know, like that was some on-screen chemistry right there. All right, we're getting sidetracked. Jesus.
We're getting
sidetracked. I have a whole game here. And I
we have a whole game. Okay.
Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. Okay. So
Brandon is one for one or two for two.
Yeah, one for one. Okay, technically two for two. All right. Next song.
West Side Story.
That is correct.
Oh, but man.
What is the name of this song?
What song? Oh, gosh. You know, I don't know.
Yes. Only one of us has to drink. All right.
We're excited about that.
The song is Take It on the Chin. It is a duet by Tony and Maria.
Tonight. That's right. Dun, 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 dun. That's right.
Tonight, I know tonight. You've seen West Side That's Story.
Right. Yeah, of course. Numerous times. It's a classic. It's definitely in my new little musicals book that you got me. So thank you again for that.
Okay, ready?
Oh my gosh, one of the best. All I Ask of You, The Phantom.
Yes.
Come on.
Ugh, we both have to drink. I know, but this was the easy round.
That was the biggest softball. Come on. It means both of you, Vic. Come on.
All right. Okay.
We have one more song in the softball round, and then we go to round two. All right. Let's go with song number four in the easy round.
Oh. I Dream a Dream.
Yep. You got it.
Yeah.
You got it. Damn it.
Yeah,
I almost had you on that one. I gave you an extra on that.
That was a tough one because that rendition of it, I hadn't heard. I mean, not that I've heard every rendition of it, but that was a different intro that I'd heard before. But once the chorus part of it set in, it was pretty obvious.
Yeah again, trying to avoid the copyright infringement with low quality karaoke version.
Right, the karaoke version. Okay, so I'm already.
That way, The Google algorithm won't recognize it, and it'll be like, we don't know this. If it's already on YouTube karaoke, then I think we're safe.
Yes.
Otherwise, this whole part's getting edited out.
That wasn't bad. I got every one, and only one on West Side Story, biffed on Tonight Tonight, which, of course, I knew, but just
it's the now, apple. We have a special round for you, round two. This is what we like to call the VC investor round. These are all songs related to money, investing, etc. So this is a special Broadway musical list for you. So let's start with song number one. That's all I'm giving you. If you don't know that, then you don't know it.
Is that from Moulin Rouge, but is that either Moulin Rouge or a Chorus Line?
Oh, you are in the right direction, but you are not right. Yes. I'll give you one more guess. You get three guesses. New rule.
Well, I feel like these new rules are not in our favor, Bree. This is a horrible idea.
True. I have been giving the favor to Brandon on these rules.
Chicago?
No, but you were you lose
close round. Again. Drink. Close okay. again. You lose.
Big Spender from Sweet Charity.
Okay. I've actually not seen Sweet Charity, believe it or not.
It's a Fosse favorite, so
Yeah. Well, you know, all those three I mentioned have some Fosse, well, not probably not Chorus Line, but there's some bossiness to the other two.
That is true. There is that is why I was saying you're in the right direction. That's all Fosse material. So, okay. Next one. Okay. That's all you get.
Don't know it.
This is Vic's favorite. Wow.
I am a Hamill fan. And
was it Hamilton?
It is Hamilton. I'm Hamilton? Not giving no away way. My shot. One shot.
Oh, that was one shot. Really? I
didn't recognize that. That is.
Wow. Okay.
That is my shot from Hamilton. And we put him in the finance category because of his position in the U.S. government. And, you know, there's like an entrepreneurial spirit to it.
100%, yes. Guys. You know what? I really love that you said that. Hamilton was like the proponent of a federal banking system, which was obviously at the time extremely controversial. And I love that you guys bring that up. That's so cool. I love that.
Absolutely.
You know, Hamilton was also at the Battle of Trenton, which was a huge win for the Americans during the Revolution. That kind of
took him
out of the war. He was like Washington's, one of his lieutenant captain types during Trenton. Yeah, I mean, Hamilton was an absolute hero on so many fronts, not just helping form our government. Anyway, fun. I love Hamilton.
Okay, let's move on.
Should we move on to the holiday bonus round?
You want to move on? Okay. How about we do one more investor round?
One more VC investor round. Yeah,
and,
I agree.
And let's see. Let me pick one real quick. Let's do... Ooh.
I don't know, but judging by kind of like the tunes and the melody, it's, could it be South Pacific?
Two more guesses. You're in the right. What? You're in the right. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Vic's like, no, he's drinking.
gosh, I'm in the right. What? God, it's too old for any of the more contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
Show that's kind of an oldie. Can you play it again?
Yep.
I definitely don't know it, but I can guess just by kind of like the melodies and stuff, but I'm definitely not gonna get it right. Like 42nd Street or...
Ah, yes, it's 42nd Street. Damn it.
Wow. I thought we had him.
I think it's my turn to drink. Now, are you going to get the song right? Because remember, the song is going to be themed towards investment. So if you know the musical well, you may guess the song.
So I've seen it, but it's been a long time. Is it Battle of the Bands? Is it?
It is. We're in the money. We're in the money.
Yeah. How did I not know that? But okay, I'm one of two on that particular try.
This is now the holiday bonus round.
Okay.
Two songs, and let's get started.
Oh gosh, you guys, come on.
I love that riff. Okay.
So obviously I waited till the end because I wanted to hear the whole riff because it's so beautiful.
10 seconds, man.
But I'm a huge Rent fan. You know, I actually think the movie's fantastic. If you were to take a sort of sampling of the movies that were made in kind of response to the success of the musical itself, I would put Rent at the top, in part because actually they drew from the original cast to be in the movie as actual singers and actors. Mm-hmm. It's not the case for Phantom and Les Mis and blah, blah, blah. Actually, Colm Wilkinson, who was the original Valjean, did play the Bishop in Les Mis, but that's a small part. So, but point being, Rent did a great job with the movie. I think it's a great film. Seasons of Love is always a winner.
Well, there's not a lot of holiday musical songs. So this is a lot. This last one, well, I think it speaks for itself.
That's a musical? That just sounds like a Christmas song. Is it Christmas Carol?
It is a Christmas song. Nope.
It's not from it's not from Christmas Carol. It's or well the person's by Judy Garland, the singer.
And I happen to be in the city that's referenced. St. Louis.
St. Louis, yep. Yeah. The show, is it really a musical? Yeah, I guess it is. With St. Louis in the title. Meet Me in St. Louis.
There it is.
Fantastic. Wow. All right.
I
will drink on our behalf, Bree, and really at the same time wish everyone a happy holidays to that end as well.
And we have one last gift for you for obviously trouncing us in this game. Yes. You won by a mile. So your final gift is box that we're in weird order, but box number two and bag number one.
Okay. I got it right here. The one I almost opened until you told me not to. Okay.
Yeah.
Kudos to you, by the way, Bree. I would not have memorized or remembered the order that
I saw them in person. So.
Yeah.
Okay. And I was waiting, by the way, for a Les Mis riff in our competition, but we didn't get one. I guess it's not really a Christmassy or money related show. So
we did I Dreamed a Dream, didn't we?
Oh, I guess you're right. You're right. We did. Good call. Oh my gosh. By the way, how did you guys feel about Anne Hathaway on that? Do you guys like her in that or not?
Is she gonna listen to this podcast? I'm just kidding. yeah, she was all right. I remember I saw Les Mis when I was in high school on Broadway, and I remember like sobbing probably harder than I've ever sobbed for anything in my life on the floor of that theater. And then watching it in the movie theater and being like, not hitting the emotional beats as hard, you know?
I feel it's an extremely, in my opinion, accurate analysis. Although I think of the leads, I think she did the best job.
I
love Russell Crowe. I think he's a great, great actor. He's a tough guy. Awful. Just terrible casting.
Couldn't sing.
Awful. And then Hugh Jackman is great. He just, his tenor is good, but I think it just could be a lot. It just wasn't full enough for me. And then Amanda Seyfried as Cosette was just off.
Terrible.
Off. Just well off. I think she's great. She's awesome in Mean Girls, but she's in Mean Girls, right? So
she's in Mamma Mia though.
She's in Mamma Mia. Yeah, that's true. Oh, that's right. That's a show. That's right. She's in Mamma Mia.
I will like to say
she is in Mean Girls, the show.
She is in the movie. She does. She plays the dumb girl. She's hilarious in that.
Yeah, she did a great job there. But anyway, it's a miscast in Les Mis. But
look. You will never get a fellow Vassar alum to speak badly about Anne Hathaway. So on that note, I think Anne was fantastic. I think both of you are out of your minds.
I didn't say she was bad. I said, relatively speaking, I thought she was the best and that she was good. I mean, look, she cut her hair off for the show, guys.
True.
That's dedication. Yeah.
That's dedication. That's dedication.
So what's the gift, Brandon? What did you win?
This is just above and beyond the call of any duty. This is incredible. Where did you guys get this?
We had it made for you.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, you guys, this is again, way above and beyond. It's a beautiful Stanford crew vest that is just, first off, perfect size and it just, I guess it's personalized. I didn't realize that. You guys, this is so nice. Thank you. So nice.
Well, we are so glad that you came here. Everyone that comes on this show, you know, we kind of like to make fun of the VC vest.
Okay.
So we give you each your own personal one so you don't show up to your first in-person conference looking like everybody else, you know?
Right.
You got to have your own independent, you know, vest there. And we felt like that represented you fairly well because it represented your Stanford and your crew. And, you know, you are a guy who's a leader and brings a lot of team spirit places you go. So we thought that would be your vest.
I will wear it extremely proudly. I love it. Again, I can't thank all four of you enough. This is so generous. It's awesome. I absolutely adore it. Thank you guys so much.
Well, the excellent. Fact that
first live you had it made, I mean, it's just, again, above and beyond. Thank you guys so much. This is gorgeous. This is amazing. Thank you.
Well, look, I know we're running way over, but as we like to do with each of these episodes, we have our guest give the last toast to end the segment. So the floor, the mic is yours. Take us out.
Well, I will reiterate thanks to all four of you and Brooklyn at large. Thank you guys so much, A, for having me, and B, for all the prep work and just how thoughtful and creative every single gift, discussion, question here was. I'm just blown away. So thank you guys. This is obviously a terrific pod. Can't wait to listen to it. Not just mine, but the many prior and in the future. I think the toast here, you know, a lot of things to be thankful for. Obviously during the holiday season makes it even more acute, but I want to wish everybody who is listening, and of course everyone's still on this call, to be safe, healthy, and look into 2021 with a very positive eye, because I think it's not a very high hurdle to jump given what's happened in 2020. But as an eternal optimist, and it's my job as a VC, I think I'm just born and bred this way to be optimistic and believe in people, and I think 2021 will be hopefully a almost complete about face once we get the vaccine distributed appropriately and getting people back to work and being able to honor our frontline workers first, obviously, and make sure that they're safe as a priority, and then getting people back into their jobs. Happy again, seeing each other again, and just imagine the parties. It's going to be awesome. Once we actually get back together in person, enjoying each other's company, family, more importantly, also friends too, 2021, it's going to be like Gatsby, you know, where it's like giant blowout parties with champagne dripping from chandeliers. I just can't wait until we can all get back to some sense of normalcy to enjoy each other's company. And I'm optimistic at that. So cheers to that.
Cheers to that.
Cheers.
Thank you for joining us. Cheers.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Oh, that was awesome.